tell us about spin chain strings in the LPQ, LPQR and YPQ?
Okay, well, thank you. I'm very happy to be here once again. Okay, this is an extended version of the talk I gave, I think, so maybe some of this stuff you already heard, but I'll try to concentrate perhaps on different things. I'm going to talk about the relation that there is between spin chains and strings. In the particular case of the relation, in the case of recently discussed manifolds, the white call, YPQ, and FQR, I'm going to remind you what they are. And this work in basically these two papers I wrote together with Sergio Benvenuti, who is a student at the Scuola Normale in Pisa in Italy. He's coming to Princeton in September. So let me start with a summary of the talk. First, I'm going to give an introduction where I'm going to remind you the basic ideas of the ADCFT correspondence applied to any equal 4 to triangle, which is the more studied case. And there it becomes clear in recent years that one has to match strings in the bulk with long operators in the boundary. And there are three important instances of this correspondence. One is between a point like strings and DPS operators, which was discussed at the very beginning. Then there is a BMN story, which relates when you have a BPS string and you have a small number of excitations. That relates to inserting some operators in this long BPS operator that you have on the other side. And then there was a story discussed by very different people between that much long strings. And in particular, I'm going to discuss a case when you match them with semi-classical states. And by that, I mean certain particular linear combination of these long operators I'm going to discuss. These ideas I'm going to try to apply to more recent cases of the ADCFT correspondence that has only n equals 1 supersymmetry. So they are four-dimensional superconformal series, and the dual superiority background is ADS5 plus X5, where X5 is a so-called Asaki-Einstein manifold, which I'm going to tell what it is. And I'm going to consider three examples of X5 with different symmetries. There is always a U1 symmetry, which is the R symmetry of the gauge theory. And then there are flavor symmetries, which are H2 plus H2. In the case discussed by Cleveland and Witten, which is the T11, which is the first one that was discussed. And they started this idea of considering n equals 1 supersymmetry. And then more recently, a new manifold with less symmetries have been found, YPQ, which has symmetry H2 plus U1, and YPQ, LPQR, which has symmetry U1 plus U1. And always this U1, which is the R symmetry. Then I'm going to discuss for the case of YPQ the matching between massless heuristics and long operators. I'm going to compare the R charges and framework charges and the energies and conformal dimensions on both sides and see that they match perfectly. And then I'm going to discuss extended strings, and this will be more qualitative. We're going to see that there is an effective act that displays the motion of these strings in this manifold, YPQ. And also, from the field theory point of view, one can compare the number of dimensions, but that you cannot do because the theory is strongly coupled. So I'm going to show how one can construct a certain model that shows that this string side only knows about the main features of the operators and not of the details. So I'm going to be more explicit later. But then I'm going to look at the LPQR manifolds, and first we wanted to do the same thing, but the field theory duals to this manifold were not known. So we constructed those duals. I'm going to discuss how one can construct what field theories are dual to these manifolds. And for those theories, I'm going to check this construction by comparing the massless heuristics and long operators, and again comparing the R charges and favor charges on both sides. And we're going to discuss the strings because we still don't know, but I'm going to do some small discussion on how that could be done. So the well-known example of ADCFT is n equals 4 superimmune, which is dual to type 2B and ADS5 plus S5. And it was not known how to describe strings in this correspondence, excited strings, until Benjamin Marcel and Anastasia, and somewhat later, Gaspar Clean and Poriakov discussed how to match long operators with strings. And one to check this correspondence by computing the number of dimensions of the operators that you propose with the energy that you consider dual to those operators. Now, this was extended by Frohlau and Seidlin by studying long strings. So, BMN studied a point like string with a few excitations, so it was a massive string but was not extended. So, these are highly excited strings which are semi classical or classical objects. Minahan and Salembo extended the computation of the field theory side by showing that there is a nice calculation using spin chains, relation to spin chains that could be used to compute the anomalous dimension of the corresponding operators. And vice versa, local action and cycling use this idea to check that this relation between the anomalous dimension and the energy using the Betti answers. And the most telling example is when you have these two operators, phi 1 plus phi 2, where these are scalars in the n equal 4 to Pn mid, and you construct operators of this type, traces of many x's and many y's, and study the anomalous dimensions, the corresponding dual string. And one way to do that is to observe that when these are very long, the computation of the anomalous dimensions reduces to solve the classical equation of motion of this action, which has as a variable a unit vector, which has parameters by two angles, which are functions of sigma and time. Sigma is a coordinate along this operator, which becomes continuous in the limit of the long operator, which is the same action that describes fast-moving strings. So you get a matching between the actions, but there is a more also qualitative matching in here. That is the one that I'm going to use for the case of YPQ, which goes as follows. So you have an operator, which is a linear combination of these traces of X and Y, and there are many of them, because you can have here all possible permutations of X and Y, because these are by n matrices, they are joined. So you can put them in many different orders, and all those orders you can sum with some linear coefficient to get the even operator over. And from those all possible operators, I'm going to consider some particular ones in which at each position you have a definite linear combination of X and Y. And a linear combination of X and Y is determined by two angles, theta and phi. Theta and phi, theta is the relative probability of being X and Y, and phi is the relative phase. And I normalize this linear combination and then extract an irrelevant phase. And then you put many of these operators, one at each position, and each one given by different angles, theta and phi. So you have an operator constructed in this way. And for each of these, you have a point in a two-dimensional sphere parameterized by these two angles. So this particular operator, which I call a coherent state or semi-classical state, is represented by a set of points in a two-dimensional sphere. And if you look more carefully, it turns out that these points are cyclically ordered and tend to lie close to each other, to their neighbors, in such a way that in the limit of an infinite or very large number of points, you get a curve in the two-dimensional sphere that is the shape of a string that describes this operator. So these operators in the limit of large n and very large number of fields have a nice geometric interpretation as a string. So this is a map that you get between operators and string. And I want to extend this to the case of YPQs and LPQRs. So let me start by reminding you what these YPQs and LPQRs are. So one has the usual case, as I mentioned, is ADS5 plus S5. And here we have different examples where you replace the S5 by an X5. And to preserve n equals 1 supersymmetry, you have to have that X5 is the Strachey-Einstein manifold. What that means is that you can have this 10-dimensional background, which is just flat 4 dimensions, and a cone, so you have a real direction, and here you put the metric for this manifold. And this manifold has to have a property that this is a Calabi-Yau manifold. And it's a non-compact because R goes from 0 to infinity, so it's a cone. And since it's not compact, you can have some hope of finding the metric of this, and need this manifold that describes, you know, the explicit metric. Now, this is a 10-dimensional background that, since this is a Calabi-Yau, it preserves, suppose you put type 2B on this pattern, it preserves two supersymmetries in counting as a four-dimensional supersymmetries. And then you can break half of that to get an equal one supersymmetry by putting these three rings at the tip of the cone. That was suggested originally by Klebanov and Witten. And the massless modes of the open string given on these three rings are described by certain field theories that one can find. But in the limit where you put a large number of these rings, there is an alternative description, which is a closed string moving in the background, produced by the bad reaction of this distribution on the geometry and considering the near horizon limit, which was the idea of Matasena. So if you do that, you can have very simple solutions here, and in the near horizon limit, they just become factorized in this part, which is ADS5, and this part, which is just X5. So when X5 is a five dimensional sphere, in the usual case, and if not, you can have many other examples. So the original example was the conifold, where this cone is some particular three-convex dimensional manifold called the conical, for which this X5 is known as T11, and that was described by Clevan and Witten. More recently, there were a full series of manifolds called YPQ that were found by Gondel, Martelli, Sparks, and Waldron, and the dual P series were found by Benvenuti, Franco, Ferrani, Martelli, and Sparks. And more, even more recently, there are a whole new series of manifolds with less symmetries, which actually include these YPQs, which are called TQR. And that was found, the metrics were found by Svetic, Lu, Page, and Pope, and the corresponding series were found in this paper that I'm describing. And also by two other groups, by Franco, Ferrani, Martelli, Sparks, Vega, and Beck from MIT, and Buti, Porcella, and Zaffaroni from Milan. So let me start by saying what T11 is. T11 is very simple. It has a metric which are two-dimensional spheres parameters by theta 1 and phi 1 and theta 2, phi 2. And then the U1 vibration parameter by psi over this four-dimensional manifold. And this is non-trivial because you have these two one forms here. Then there is a metric of YPQ found by this author, as I said, which I'm writing here. This is the point in which they first write it in the paper. But if you can rewrite them, rewrite it by doing a simple Cohen transformation from alpha to beta, and then have the same form. Has a four-dimensional manifold, which is not so symmetric as this one, and then a U1 vibration parameter by this layer psi. And if you do that, then you get some non-trivial functions of this coordinate y. In particular, this p of y is a cubic polynomial divided by a linear function. And that's the only non-trivial function that appears in the metric when you write the term of coordinates beta. And this cubic polynomial has three roots, and you take the two smallest roots, and you call them y1 and y2, and they determine the range of variation of the coordinate y. And they are given in terms of these integers p and q, which label the manifold by this formula. So we want to study now matrix geodesics on time times this background, so you put this YPQ, and you are a timeline coordinate, and you want to find the geodesics that matrix particles follow, and this essentially becomes geodesics on this YPQ manifold. So you write the action for the matrix particles, and this has to be solved subject to a constraint. And one can do that by using a simple answer to identify word line time with a spatial time or space time time up to some constant kappa, which turns out to play the role of the conjugate momentum to time, that means of the energy. So this should be identified with the conformal dimension of the corresponding operator in the field theory. And one can compute the conjugate momentum by deriving the Lagrangian with respect to the velocities and construct the Hamiltonian after you do this, which is simply the Hamiltonian of a particle moving in a curved background. And you can use this constraint to relate the Hamiltonian to delta, so from here you get delta squared equal to the Hamiltonian, essentially. So you get a delta squared, the conformal dimension squared, or the energy squared, is given by this formula. So in this formula, you have some momenta which are conserved, and one can see from here that there is an isometry which corresponds to translations in alpha, translation in psi, and there is also a SU2 symmetry that rotates these coordinates, and you have to do some transformation also inside for that to be an isometry, but there is an SU2 isometry. So this gives rise to an SU2 conserved momenta, which is J squared and P psi, or another conserved momenta, and then the other conserved momenta is P alpha. And QR is a linear combination of these two, which one introduces because turns out to be dual to the, or corresponding to the R charge, the symmetry that rotates the supersymmetries. And if you compute then, and then PY is not conserved, so that's the only thing which is not conserved because the energy is conserved, so this will be used as an equation for Y, so this essentially is Y dot that appears here as a function of Y. So it's a particle in the potential that you can solve to find the geodesics. And I'm going to discuss that a little bit later, but for the moment one can observe here that this is positive, this is positive, and it turns out that J squared is always bigger than P psi squared, so this is positive. So you get that delta is always bigger than 3 half QR, which is a bound that follows from any quadrants of a conformal algebra, so it's a so-called DPS bound. But one can see that this bound can be saturated for certain particular geodesics, so In the case of an S5, you have that these managed heuristics are all maximum circles and are all BPS, but in this case, not all heuristics are BPS. The only heuristics which are BPS are those where these terms are zero. So this term has to be zero, and this implies that y dot is zero, so the particle is at rest in this point is y. This has to be zero, so j has to be equal to phi psi. And y is a constant equal to y zero, let's say, so you put y zero here, and the fact that this is zero means that this constant value of y is given by the ratio between the U1 charge and the R charge, after a factor of 3 and a minus sign. So we have found that there are some particular heuristics that we call BPS heuristics, that satisfy that the conformal dimension is 3 halves is R charge. They see that the constant value of y, so py is 0, j is equal to phi psi, and the constant value of y at which they see is given by the ratio between the U1 and the R charge. And this ratio can go from y1 to y2, because this is the range in which the coordinate y can vary. And if you use that j is equal to phi psi, and you use the relation between phi alpha, phi psi, and the R charge, then you can see that j over QR is also given by this coordinate y. So y determines the ratio between the SU2 charge and the R charge, and the U1 charge and the R charge of this heuristic. So now we want to discuss what operators are dual to this and check that they have the same values of charges. But for that, first I have to see which are the dual gauge theories. And this was done by this author, as I already mentioned. But instead of probably you have heard already all this construction, I'm going to consider just a particular example, which is this Y32, which has the dual gauge series and n equals 1 superconformal series with gauge group SUN to S6. And this SUN to S6, the 6 gauge groups are represented by these nodes here. And with each node, you have a vector multiplet corresponding to the gauge field and the gauge Eno, but you also have chiral multiplets that mean matter. And this matter is represented by these arrows. So you have an arrow that goes from the node 6 to the node 1. It means that this is a chiral multiple that transforms the fundamental of this group and the anti-fundamental of this other group. And if there are two arrows, it means that there are two such chiral multiples, and they are actually in a doublet of the SU2 flavor sequence. So now you want to find, and by analogy with these XYs and XYs that you have in N equals 4, you want to put also here many of these chiral fields to form a gauge invariant operator. So if you have an arrow that goes, let's say, from 2 to 5, and then you put one that goes from 5 to 6, you can contract the indices so that you get an operator which is a singlet of this gauge group, and so on. So what you need to gauge, get a singlet of all the gauge group is a closed path in this diagram. So you have to find all the closed paths, but this is, it's very easy to say, but it's a bit complicated to describe precisely or mathematically which are all the possible closed paths that you can get of arbitrary length. So there is a better way to do that using a different representation, which is so-called periodic representation that was found by Hanani, Kenaway, Franco, Vega, and Best. And what they said is they constructed first a unit cell like this that later on you can use to tie the plane, because this is the same as this up to a vertical shift, and this is the same as this, so you can glue this many times. And what you do is you take these nodes and you put them several times, so that means that you unfold this diagram if you want, and these arrows are the same arrows that you have here. So you see the arrow going from 6 to 1, then you will find it here from 6 to 1, and so on. And these doublets are the arrows which are the two colors, the red red and black. So you have 4, 5, and 4, 5 corresponds to these two 4, 5s. And the advantage of this diagram is first that you have an explicit representation of the framework charges. So if an arrow extends in the horizontal direction, that means you have charge one under this framework symmetry. And if it extends in the vertical direction, it has charge plus 1/2 or minus 1/2 with respect to the U1 group inside this SU2. So here you can do two different representations. One can take the red arrows, or you can take them away. And if you take them away, then a vertical arrow represents the double of SU2. And this is the representation I'm going to use in the next fancy, but I'm going to come back to the other later on. So here I'm considering the black arrows, and each arrow that extends in the vertical direction, like this or like that, should have thin 1/2, so that means that there are two of those arrows. And then you can tie the plane with this to get lattice like that, And in this lattice, you have to find the closed path, but now closed path are paths that start from one node, let's say this with number 5, and move around the lattice following the arrows until you end up in another node also with number 5. And if you go back, this will represent a closed path in this picture here. And it will represent the gauge invariant operator. So the first thing that you notice is, suppose you want to move to the right, these arrows mostly point to the left, so you have to, if you want to go right, you have to move first up, then I can move right, but I cannot move right again here, so I have to move up, and then right and so on. That means that for every 3 steps that I want to move to the right, I have to move 5 steps up. So there is no way that starting from here, I can go to this region of the lattice. And if you go to the left, you see the same phenomenon. There are different paths, but all have the property that every 3 steps, you go one up. So there is no way to reach this region of the graph starting from this point. So there are 2 lines with definite slope. If you make this very long, such a way that essentially you ignore the lattice, so you have a maximum and minimum slope that this path can have in this diagram. And the maximum minimum slope means that the ratio between the U1 chart, which is the EC2 chart, which is the vertical direction, in this case 5, and the horizontal direction, which is the U1 chart, has a maximum and minimum value. And if you remember, these ratios of charges were given by the position of the geodesic at the, in the coordinate Y, and this has also a minimum and maximum value, from Y1 and Y2. So this minimum and maximum arises here from this particular property of this graph with arrows, and in the solution arrives from these zeros of this function P of Y. That doesn't allow you to extend the manifold beyond these 2. And if you compare the ratio, and you can also compute the R charges of these operators, the U1 charges and the U2 charges, they agree perfectly with those compute for the geodesic system at those points. And if you think of a geodesic system at another intermediate point, it will correspond to some path here having a slope between these 2 maximum and minimum slopes. So this is the thing that we proposed. And in a different way, it was also discussed by this other author. So now we want to consider the phenomenon that didn't exist, as I said, in the case of X5, which is that there are geodesics which are not BPS. So for example, we said that if we fix this ratio, the coordinate Y is fixed at some value, and this can be seen by drawing a potential for this coordinate Y, and this potential has a minimum precisely at this value. But you can start with this ratio of charges, putting the particle here, and what you will find is an oscillation around this minimum. That means that you have a geodesic, and I have another geodesic, which moves around the first one. And one can quantize these oscillations, and these oscillations one can correspond to non-BPS geodesics, and one can see that these oscillations do not carry any SU2, U1, or R charge, but they carry some energy, which is, if you quantize it, quantize a unit of 2. So N is an integer. Now, also J, the total electric angular momentum, has to be equal to P psi. One can take geodesics which do not satisfy this, and by using that the angular momentum is quantized, one can see that for a small variation with respect to a large J, you get that this excitation will carry some angular momentum, or will not carry U1 or R charge, but will carry some energy, which will be twice the angular momentum. So one can think that this, following the VMM prescription, this might correspond to inserting some operators in this long operator, which was this long product of fields, which was represented by this path. One can see that there are indeed 2 operators corresponding to the concept currents of U1 and SU2 flavor, similarly that have precisely these quantum numbers. So they are the correct operators to identify with insertion, to insert in this BPS operator to represent these slightly non-BPS geodesics. Yes?
When you say you're quantizing here, do you mean I see a potential and I quantize a la Schrodinger, or are you just saying classically, I need these quantum numbers in order that the orbit closes when it goes around?
No, I mean, I would say harmonic oscillator on the quantize. And that should correspond. So, yes, so that's to get the unit. So, if not, you should say that we carry some delta, and using this limit, you can, it will correspond to put an arbitrary number. But in principle, what you can see is that this Hamiltonian is actually a quantum operator, and this is a derivative, and those are the eigenfunctions of the Laplace. And then you do a classical approximation, but when you go to a detail like this, you have to take it from the quantization. Just to get the correct units here. And this U1 has a quantum number 2 because it's a 5 bar 5, the supercar. So, and this was also discussed later by Sonnenschein and collaborators in the PP wave approach. Later on, and they are also, I think, thinking about it in QR. Now we want to match extended strings, and extended strings are that I'm going to consider strings which are extended in such a way that each point of the string moves approximately around one of the CPS relations that we were studying. There is a very simple way to describe those strings. First, we get the metric, which is time. This is a Sakai-Einstein manifold, which is a four-dimensional manifold, and you have a U1 vibration by this angled side, and some one form there that we gave explicitly before. One can see that if psi is equal to 3t, this is zero, so these are massive geodesics, and turn out to be this geodesic that we are discussing in the previous transparencies. Now one can do a coordinate transformation from psi to psi 1. And in this new coordinate, this metric looks like this. This metric or this frame has the property that if a particle is at rest in this coordinate, it will be moving almost at the speed of light in this other coordinate. Because if psi 1 is almost constant, then psi will be proportional to 3t, and this will be 0. So we want strings that in this metric actually move very slowly, which means, as I said, that each point of the string will be moving at the speed of light in the original metric. One can put the Fourier correction for the string moving in this pattern and use the answer to again identify what is time with space-time time. And you get you take the limit that the velocity is very small and the non-trivial limit follows if you take the energy of the string going to infinity in such a way that this problem is fixed. And you get a reduced action that describes the motion of this fast string in this metric. So this type one essentially you can take out because it's a total derivative, and you get the metric, but however, get an action, and you can see that this action contains all the information on the metric, which contains this one form A1, and this other metric, four dimensional metric. So, with respect to this full metric, you don't lose any information by just considering these fast moving strings, which is interesting because it might allow you to reconstruct the metric from the field theory. So, in our case, we replace this metric of YPQ, and you get this. This action, where y and beta are constant variables, and same essentially theta and phi, and you get this other part where n is a unit vector parameterized by theta and phi. And lambda is the radius of ADS space in string units. For that R charge, if you take the R charge to be very large and keep lambda over Q squared fixed, then this R charge acts like H bar because it appears 1 over H bar because it appears here in front. So the limit of R charge is a classical limit for this action. So you need to, okay. This is a generic for all Sakai-Einstein manifolds, so one can do this for T11 as a first example, and this has not been published because it's rather trivial, and was done by, I looked at this with Angelova and Pando Sasha from Michigan, and started also, told me he looked at that, but nobody published anything because this just gives you two independent SU2 action. So you have an SU2 action for this C1, theta 1, and so maybe I should show you what this metric was. So T11 has this theta 1 phi 1 and theta 2 phi 2 that parameters these two spheres, and this U1 vibration here, which is similar to the. Well, this is your essentially this cosine theta 5 1 dot and cosine theta 2 phi dot 2 that you get. That you get here, and these are just follow from the metric of the sphere. So you have two unit vectors parameterized by these two sets of arms. And these two are decoupled, so it's rather trivial. And one can have an infinity interpretation for that. In this theory, there are these chiral fields, A and B. A is charged under one of the SU2s, and B is another of the SU2s, because this has two SU2 symmetries, as you see from here. And one can do a perturbative computation because the theory is strongly coupled, but one can do some heuristic argument by looking at the superpotential, which is of this type, has two A's and two B's. And if you use these as vertices in a Feynman diagram, you can see that you can construct non-trivial two-point functions between operators such that the spins of the A's are flipped, or the spins of the B's are flipped, but you cannot flip the spins of the A's with the B's or do other things. So you get like two independent spin chains, one for the A and one from the B's, and the, for the B's, and the effective action of that will be this. One SU2 spin chain action for the A's and the other for the B's. So there is, but here this is a heuristic calculation, as I said, because the one has to put here gluons and other things because the theory is strongly coupled. But it gives you an idea of what interactions are responsible for such an action. Now, YPQ is more complicated, but we said we reduce the study of these operators in YPQ just to the study of paths in this lattice. We said that paths with constant slope correspond to point-like strings sitting at some value of y. So it's natural to say that if you have paths with slope that changes as a function of the coordinate y that parameters the path, then you will get a string which is extended in the direction y. And the shape of the string will be given by this value of the slope as a function of sigma. And one has also, this path can move, so you will have a y dot, and that you can identify with beta, the conjugate to y. And each piece of the path, if it's extending the vertical direction, has an SU2 spin. So this SU2 spin can point in any direction parameter by two angles. So you have to specify also two angles as a function of sigma. And in this way, you get y, beta, and theta, and phi as a function of sigma, and that can be interpreted as a shape of a string in the bulk dual to such a path here in the boundary. And this path is some operator that you have in the field. Then you want to be more precise and see, check that, but compare by comparing the energy of the string that you propose with the normal dimension or the conformal dimension of this operator. But that cannot be done because the theory is strongly coupled. On the other hand, one can see that the action is very simple. It's rather simple. So we don't expect that this action will contain all the details of how these arrows are pointing or how many there are and so on. And this is because this action is good only for very very long paths. So a very long path, you should expect that this will have some continuum limit, with only the main or the coordinating features of this path will be important. So we tested this idea by considering a simplified model of this lattice, which is simply a square lattice whose sides are parallel to the maximum and minimum slope that you can have, and the cells are all just rectangles. And we normalize these sides by saying that they have unit arc charge. So the paths here are much simpler, but they have the same property. They are always containing this sort of cone inside here. And then we have to have some Hamiltonian or some that moves these paths around, so we can convert one path into the other, so we can have eigen states and so on. So the simplest Hamiltonian that you can think of is that if you have a path that goes to the left and then to the right, to the left and then to the right, you can replace it by a path that goes first to the right and then to the left. And this simply means that you interchange two neighboring links. So you have left, right, you interchange it, and you get right, left. So we propose this simple model to see what of the Hamiltonian, which has an interchange between near consecutive links. And you subtract it from one so that if you have a path which has all links pointing right, this Hamiltonian will give zero. So that will be okay because if it points always to the right, it is DPS operator, it doesn't have any extra energy. And then we started this in the classical approximation, which means that we construct coherent state. Essentially, we think that each link of the path can be in any linear combination of being to the left or being to the right. And this linear combination, this is the quantum mechanical, this linear combination is given by two, by these two numbers, which are normalized. And those also allow you to define an average value of the slope for that link, because y1 is the slope of this L1 and y2 is the slope of L2, so you define the average slope by y. And then you introduce also a relative phase, which is normalized here with the U1 charge of this operator, but since these two are different, essentially alpha is a relative phase between these two possibilities, and this also carries an SU2 spin, that you can rotate with an arbitrary SU2 matrix. And there is some redundancy because if psi is essentially a phase here, so there is a redundancy between psi and alpha that you can fix by some gauge fixing condition. And now for this generic space, one can write a particular space, you can write this action, which if you consider O to be a completely generic state, the equation of motion means that you drop O from here, you just get the Schrodinger equation. So this is the action that gives you the Schrodinger equation, quantum mechanical Schrodinger equation, but if instead of considering generic O, you consider O's that have this property that can be written like this, and you replace only this O here, what you get is some equations of motion for the parameters of O as a function of time. So you get a reduced action, which can be considered a classical action for the parameters of this trial space. And if you write such an action, you get exactly the same action that you got from superiority for the motions of a string. You have this term, and you have this other term. You get this effective parameter, you don't know what it is, that came from this Hamiltonian. And then we know it should be identified with a lambda, the radius of ADS5. And also you get that this function here, instead of being this function that you got in supergravity, which is a cubic polynomial divided by a linear polynomial, you get just a quadratic term. And this quadratic term also has zeros in y1 and y2, the same as this. And that's given by this fact that there is a maximum and a minimum slope at y1 and y2. So the actions are quite similar, and the difference is that if you put this P of Y, is this the four-dimensional metric that is encoded here satisfies the Einstein equation, and with this P of Y it doesn't. So from the physical point of view, there doesn't seem to be any particular reason why you need the Einstein equation, but from gravity you need it, so you get that P of Y. So the fact that there is no agreement is not too bad, because we didn't actually use the correct operator, we use some reduced model, but it tells us that indeed the string presumably doesn't know all the details of the operator, because with a simplified model we already reproduce most of the properties of the action. And more importantly, this action, which as we said can be interpreted as a reduced action, moving in perhaps a slightly different background with slightly different POY, appear directly from the field theory as a tool to compute the normal dimension of some operators at least in this simplified picture.
So
this
y1
is the same
that appears
that appeared earlier? Yeah, this y1, yes. Are equal to this other y1 and y2, and this comes from this agreement that you already have. So we already know that the slope of these two agree with y1 and y2 from the VPS calculation, because for the VPS operator there is perfect agreement. And then this will imply essentially that this one and y2 will be the same on both.
So you don't get the denominator,
is that the difference? Yeah, so this is a cubic polynomial divided by 2, so this has a cell root, which is y3, and this you don't have here, and you also don't have this pole. It's like these two have some power. And this metric actually is a standard metric that you can write. So when you have this YPQ manifold, you can write immediately some standard metric, which is not, for the cone, it's not Ricci flat. And this is the metric these mathematicians sometimes use, and it's one or two eggs here from this data. But if you want to get an Einstein metric, you have to work harder and you get this. So now we want to go to the examples of LPQR. Okay, I think I don't have much time, but LPQR, algebraic varieties, essentially is a way to represent varieties that have U1 actions. So you quotient by the U1 actions. So suppose you have an S2 two sphere. This is, you can rotate it around its axis, and if you go quotient by that rotation, you get the theta coordinate, they say the latitude that goes from 0 to pi. So you can think of the sphere as a product of a segment times a circle, but where the circle shrinks to 0 size at the ends of the segment, which essentially means that this U1 action doesn't do anything when you are there at the north or the south pole. If you have the quotient of C3 minus the origin divided by C, where you identify triplets up to the multiplication of the three by a complex number, which is a space called CP2, or depends on the notation, but you can call it CP2, is represented by this triangle. In this triangle, you have at each point you have a two toes, so this is a four-dimensional variety. And the action that you consider two U1 actions that rotate the space of Z1 and Z2. So if Z1 is zero, the rotation around alpha doesn't do anything, and you have to see just zero and Z2 and Z3, but identify that to a common factor, and this essentially is a two sphere. So this is represented by this line. So this line represents the point where this Z1 is zero and this U1 action is a trivial. This horizontal line represents Z2 equals zero, where this action of beta is trivial. And if Z3 is zero, the action of rotating alpha and beta at the same time is trivial because it can be considered this factor that we are dividing by. And it's represented by this segment here. And the normal to this segment is a coordinate set 1, 1. And this represents that this is a translation, which is translation of the same phase by an alpha and beta. And you can go to the next step, which is a three-dimensional here, that's a three-dimensional torus, and FPQR is an example of that, and more precisely the cone over FPQR, which is this Calabrian cone. So you have a three-dimensional cone in three-dimensional space, which is the region inside these four lines. And if you cut here with a horizontal plane, you get a four polygon that is drawn here. There are some integers that describe the position of these points. And in terms of these indices, is what this PQR essentially are. So it has some combination of those. Let me be brief. Then this is a topological description of this manifold. You have to find also a metric, and this was done by Svetich, Luke, Page, and Pope, who found the metric in this way. There are two non-trivial coordinates now, x and y. You have this non-trivial family, which are again qubit polynomials, that I'm not writing. And one can normalize things so that y goes from minus 1 to 1. And x goes from some x1 to some x2. And one can write the metric in this way, as before, where psi r is a conjugate angle to the r charge. And one thing I want to mention is that in the original paper, it wrote the metric in terms of this angle psi, but you have to, for our purpose, we needed to identify which angle was conjugate to the r charge, and we find that the angle was like this. And to see how, why it's that, we need to know how to find the R charge. So the R charge in the field theory is a rotation of the supercharge. In the bulk, that corresponds to the rotation of the covalently constant spinner that produces this supersymmetry. And the covalently constant spinner in the Calabi-Yau can be used to construct this holomorphic covalently constant 3 form. So essentially, you have that omega is something like this, with three indices. So this is a three form, and this is a spinor, and these are the gamma matrices. And if you rotate eta by this, which is the R symmetry, this will rotate by e to the 2i alpha. So we want to compute this, so we could try to find the quality constant spinor, but we could try to find this three form. And it has to have holomorphic so that this is non-zero only when these are Z's and not Z bars. And this Martesian spark forms three one forms which are holomorphic that you can multiply to construct the three forms. And if you want this to be a covalently constant, one can put psi r to be some particular linear combination of the three U1 symmetries that you have. You have translations in phi, translations in psi, which is not here because I already wrote psi, but sorry, this psi. And this psi r, which before was written in terms of psi. So you write psi r as a linear combination of these three. And you can use, for example, Maple or something like that to compute the covariant derivative of this and see that this is covariant derivative is zero. Only psi r is this particular combination. This particular linear combination that you have here. And this way you can identify this angle and do this trivial transformation and write the metric in that way. So now we want to find the massless geodesics. And again, we have a computed Hamiltonian for the motion of this part instead of the momenta. And there are these two momenta, Px and Py. And here there is a factor of 1/2 with respect to delta squared. So this is 3/2 Q1 squared. So the VPS limit appears for when this is zero. And that means that the fabric doesn't move in X and doesn't move in Y. So it's sitting at some point in this rectangle parameterized by this X and Y. And this also have, these two also have to be zero, and this all these coefficients a1, b1, c1, c2, d1, d2 are some functions of x and y that then become constant once you fix some value of x and some value of y. And that means that the, since this has to be zero, that means that p5, which is one of the u1 charges divided by the r charge, has some value, and this p psi divided by p psi r, which is the r charge, also has some other value. So these two values of the concern momentum divided by the air charges are fixed by the position of the geodesic in this rectangle X and Y. So it's very similar to before. Now we have to find the field theory dual, and I'm going to describe how we did that. The first clue is that the Y32 is one of the particular L, so L153 is turns out to be equal to Y32. So for that, as I showed before, we have this unit set that represents the matter content of the field theory. So we already know this case. And one can look at these different YPQs, and one can see that they are all constructed of, this set is always constructed of these unit blocks. A block like this, and this rectangle. So in this particular case, you see that there are two blocks of this type, two of this other type, and one rectangle. Now it's clear from here that since this Y32 has an extra SU2 symmetry, you have to have as many arrows going up as arrows going down, because this corresponds to the splitting of SU2 into spin up and spin down. So here you have two of these blocks and two of these blocks. But the generic LPQR doesn't have SU2 symmetry, it has only U1 cross U1, so one can immediately generalize this by putting a different number of blocks of this type and that type. For example, one can put three blocks of this type, and one of this type, and one of this rectangle. And this is also a unit set that can be used to type the plane. Now, we propose to identify this with L154. More generically, the proposal today is that, that can be argued in different ways, is that if you put P blocks of this type, R minus P of this type, and Q minus R of this type, and you manage to glue them in a unit set that you can use to type the plane, then you will get the dual of LPQR, the matter content here.
Sorry. What is that? Is it this
thing? Yeah, this is a, so this unit set represents the, so the number of nodes, which here is 6, represents that there are SUN to the 6 gauge group. So you have a 6 vector multiples for each of these. And then you have this arrow represents the chiral matter that you have. So it completely determines the theory. And okay, you also need to know the superpotential. The superpotential is given by the these phases. So this triangle means that you multiply these three fields and you get one terminal superpotential, and also for all the triangles. And this square means that you have quartic superpotential that you multiply these four fields. So this diagram, and it gives you also the U1 charges of all these fields. So this diagram gives you the matter content and the superpotential. What you don't know is the coefficients in front of the superpotential, so that you don't know. And there could be different, so it will be conform manifold. Okay, so you have to test that this thing is correct. And to test that, one can compute the central charge of the conformal theory, which is sometimes called A. And it was shown by Gatzer, Friedman, and collaborators when the things about this correspondence started, that there is a relation between the central charge and the volume of the manifold, the dual manifold, and the volume can be computed from the metric of Bessich, Lu, and Po. And they wrote the volume in this way, PQR and S is just P plus Q minus R, so it's just for brevity. And you have this W, which is determined as a solution of a quartic equation. So they found that this W can only be obtained by solving a quartic polynomial. The coefficients of the polynomial are complicated functions of this integer. When we compute the central charge of this theory, we found this again, one quartic equation for this omega, but now double W, which now represents the central charge, and the quartic polynomial was exactly the same that they obtained in supernatural. So we have the same solution. And we also computed the matching between these operators and the geodesics. So we compute the geodesics, and as I mentioned, and the geodesics are given by points in this rectangle x and y, and in particular interest are the corners of this rectangle. So before you have the coordinate y that extended from y1 and y2, and this y represented the ratio between the U1 charge and the U1 charge and the R charge, or the EC2 charge and the R charge. But here you have two corners, x and y. And so instead of two endpoints, you have these four corners, which represent the maximum possible ratios of U1 charges with respect to R charges. And if you use this unit set that I had in the previous transparency, here, and you use it, and you glue it to tie the plane as before, and here I'm drawing this in some other colors, so you can see how it's repeated, so it doesn't have a special meaning. Then you have to start from one point here, follow the arrows until you end up in another point with the same label. And here you have four particular paths where this path is defined as the path that uses only right moving arrows that point to the right or up. So you won't only go to the right or up. And you see that every four you go to the right, you go one up. And the same left up, left down, and right down. So you have these four paths that then you can iterate and get a very long path. And you can compute the R chart and the table charges, and the R charge can be computed using this A maximization procedure of Instigator and Beck that was found recently. We match, and you compute all that, and you see that these four paths match perfectly the quantum numbers of the geodesics sitting at this four core. If you do this identification, so this is for this particular L154, but you can do it generically for any LPQR, assuming that you glue those many elementary blocks, and you get that there is perfect minimum for all LPQRs. And this test, this proposal that this added dual field theory. So the matter product of the dual field theory is given by this type of diagram with this problem. And this was also, as I said, done by these two other groups simultaneously. So, okay, let me just give the conclusions. So to conclude, in the case of YPQ, we were able to match massless DPH geodesics with chiral primaries or the chiral ring of the field theory, of the conformal theory. Then we studied slightly non-DPH geodesics, and we matched them to certain insertions of currents in these long operators. Then we discussed extended strings, match with some long operators, but we could test this matching on some qualitative level. We suggested that the string action only knows about the coarse grain features of this operator, which are the minimum and maximum slopes, mostly that, not much more than that. For the LPQR manifold, we show how to find, or just briefly, how to find the dual gauge theory. For those, we test those findings by computing the same matching here between massless geodesics and chiral primaries. We didn't discuss how to match these long strings, but it turns out that to match these long strings, you need now two slopes, because you have two coordinates. So if you have a string extending like that, you should associate the coordinate x and y with the ratio between, so you have two U1 charges, which are coordinate horizontal and vertical. So you have two ratios, and these are related to the position of the geodesic in this x and y. So if you have an extended string, you should have two ratios as a function of sigma. And this is hard to see how you get from here. So it seems that it's a better representation to have a three-dimensional graph where you put these arrows that have a U1 charge and this U1 charge, but you also put the third direction where you have perpendicular to this plane where you have the R charge. So if you have this fourth direction, then if you start from this node in the center, you will have four lines that represent these four paths. And if you start from here, you will end up always inside these four lines. So it will be like a cone, and this will be, sorry. And this reminds you very, very much of this cone that you have here, which is something that represents the manifold, so it's a string property or the bulk. And this cone that you will get from here is a property of a field theory. So one would expect that there is a more or less direct relation between the two, but okay, we haven't worked that out, yet. So, okay, so that's the only.
Any more questions?